Welcome, Sharon, to Adelaide Chronicle, and we're going to do a little bit of an interview or a conversation that's recorded here at Christie Walk, where I live, that is on the land of the Kaurna people, and about a book you've published that I have read and found it quite amazing. Do you want to tell us a little bit of background about this and perhaps give an introduction on who you are?
Sure, thank you very much, firstly, for being interested in the book and reading it and for inviting me to talk about it. That's much appreciated. I'm glad you enjoyed reading it. My name is Sharon Ead. I'm a lifelong South Australian, born and lived in the Semaphore area all my life, which is where the closing scenes of this book is set. Now, the book, I guess it was my way, after having been involved in grassroots environment movement and sort of change work inside and outside my day job, which is state government now, has been for 20 years, to try and encapsulate things I've learned in a story, because one of the revelations I've had is that over time you can't communicate as well to people with facts and figures as you can, and with rationality as you can through stories. This is our common means of communicating and transmitting knowledge down through thousands of years. It's through story, and that's what people remember. So I was like, well, who's writing the story about all this? These situations that humanity's found itself in, you know, facing climate change, facing biodiversity loss, and all these other wicked problems, I suppose. And I was looking around at this sort of, I guess, what you call sci-fi or climate fiction, has emerged, and a lot of it seemed to be very dystopian and very negative and very, oh my God, the world's gone to hell, and, you know, makes for a great Hollywood blockbuster, maybe, but it's not very. A bit depressing, so I thought, well, who's writing these stories? And just, there's others out there that are more positive, but I wanted to kind of put my own take on it. And it was the original trigger for it was a paper by Bill Reese, who is the creator of the ecological footprint concept. Who wrote a paper back in the early 2000s or mid 2000s called "Is Humanity Fatally Successful?" And I thought, that's an interesting question. And so his whole paper was about, you know, biologically, are we programmed to fill every available ecological niche and use up all the resources in that niche? And is it possible to, you know, like, what we have to do to try and address that? So it was a bit of a contentious, you know, idea. And I thought, that's an interesting idea. So that was the first kind of idea that I wove into the story. And the second one was when I got involved with Postgrowth, which is an online network really to begin with. And I connected to a fellow called Andrew Wilford, who was ex-Royal Australian Air Force, ex-Boeing. And he was teaching engineering up at, I think it was Bond University up in Queensland. And I never met him in person, but we used to, you know, talk about ideas and all sorts of things. And he mentioned to me once he had this idea about a simulator. So he'd been talking to different people in military circles, because he's ex-military, and scientific circles about bringing our capabilities together in a simulator. What he probably meant was something you could punch numbers into, you know, like Club of Rome type scenario, that, you know, you could put these scenarios in. But I heard simulator, I heard virtual reality when he was talking about this. So that is the other concept that's been woven into this book as a way of sort of exploring. And that the key thing, I guess, of the book is why human beings, even though we have this advantage of foresight and planning, why we don't act in our collective self-interest to sort of address these looming threats, whether it's climate change or a pandemic, you know, or biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse. So it was really, well, how do I take these big topics and turn it into a story that's a page-turner? Because just before all this happened, the Da Vinci Code came out, and read this book, and it was a good yarn, good story, but it did get me thinking after, well, where did this come from? Where did these ideas come from? And then I went sort of back reading and investigating that. So I kind of wanted to write a book that brought together all my kind of favourite sustainability ideas and metaphors and story, told it in a good yarn that people would read and enjoy, but also maybe think a little bit more deeply about, well, where did that come from? Where did that come from? And to be able to go off and, you know, you could find out about these things on the internet, and just make it really vivid and a good story that sort of stayed with people and got them curious about some of the things that was, you know, that were cropped up in the book. So that's a basic little story of how the story came to be.
And it's very topical, isn't it? It covers so many issues that are so relevant to today.
Yeah, well, this is it. And I have spent years working in grassroots environment and activist movements, and also in government, where you try to get things changed within government, which is also interesting. How you bring people on board and how you communicate to people became a very big focus for me. I started actually writing about this gap on a blog in my, outside work life, to try and help people get better at communicating these issues, where they can get very fraught and very terse.
Yeah.
Or you might, how do you talk to different audiences, really, is what it is. How do you talk to people that in a way that resonates for them? So, yeah, with this book, I was trying to, I think there's a great quote that I read not long ago, which is, the story is a mechanism for getting an idea inside a fortified mind. So, people that wouldn't necessarily identify as being interested in sustainability or interested in green or environmental issues pick this book up, read it because it's a fun story or an interesting story, but then they discover these things along the way. And I really just wanted to help people discover some of the things I learned without it being a lecture.
Yeah, it's not preachy at all. It's just clever, and it's layered. It's multi-layered.
Yeah, thank you. I really wanted to, and I was very conscious of that, because when I was trying to teach myself how to write fiction, because I've always written my whole life, but trying to write a story and having to understand character arc, plot and what drives plot, all these different things, it really took me a long time. I had to read a lot of books about how to write, and then I had to kind of question myself and go, look, are you preaching here? And I tried very hard to stay away from that. I actually commissioned a couple of readers and commission work feedback on this book to make the story stronger, which was really worth doing because it did make it a lot better. It is very layered, and I hope it's almost like when you watch The Simpsons or something, and you get that kind of superficial layer and get all the kind of in-jokes underneath. I was hoping that would work that. So some people will read it and just go, that was a cracking great yarn and it had this theme, and other people will be going, well, they'll be picking up a few gags that I've hidden in there, references, but also they'll be going, what is this idea? And I have included in the plot spoilers some notes about where some of these things that have popped up in the book have come from, so you can go and find out whether I made them up or whether they're real.
And I enjoyed doing that too. Tell me how the Clock of the Long Now came about.
Well, that's actually a real thing. That's been going on, the Long Now Foundation. When the astronauts went into space and took that picture of Earth from outer space, took that picture, and it sort of really burst the environment movement, because you could see the Earth from the outside and see it was all one, right? But that was the big here. This is how they describe it. That picture showed us the big here. And what they're trying to do with the Long Now is stretch out our, the way we respond to things from short term to longer term. So the big here and the long now. So what the space missions did with helping us understand the big here, they're trying to do with time and future. So all of their calendar dates are expressed in five digits. And the idea of this clock of the long now was to build a clock that struck once every year, I think it is, and the times come out every 100 years or something like that.
Yes.
So it was just really a kind of a good thought experiment. Think about something other than the next financial quarter, election cycle, all those sorts of things. So it's that kind of seven-generation thinking of First Nations. And there's a whole process about, thinking about how are people going to understand and interpret this in 1,000 years' time or even 100 years' time. So it's a really good way of stretching people's minds out from the immediate to the longer term. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. And brought for me to mind immediately Carl Sagan's Pale Blue Dot, because it's all about kind of the ridiculousness of the way that we utilise time and the way that we view ourselves in time. So I thought that was really, really good. There's so many bits in it that I'd love to talk about, but I reckon we'll just leave this one as a teaser and follow up, take it a bit further, closer to the publication date.
Yeah, thank you very much. Like I said, there's a lot of things written in there that are ideas or concepts or things that I've discovered on my journey over many years that I was trying to look for a way to share with people woven through a story in a fun way that they would go, wow, I didn't know about that, or it's just a new idea to them. So it's really my way of trying to invite people into things that I've understood in my world through a story that I've written, and I hope people get those little flashes of inspiration inspiration to go and take something up. I do know that one of the people that bought the book and read it has been on Google Earth looking things up on the other side, which was really gratifying. So it's inspired curiosity and it's inspired people to think and to expand thinking. That's great. That's, you know, people enjoyed the book. That's the biggest reward that somebody can get as a creative, and that somebody's enjoyed their work. I think. So thank you.
And I've been looking for anagrams all the way through it.
I'm not going to tell you them on this tour, but yeah, once we've finished.
All right, thanks so much, Sharon.
No worries, thank you very much, Sue. I look forward to talking to you again in the near future. Thank you.
Okay.